Welcome to the Week's End Point. We can actually attempt to think about the bigger picture and achieve social cognition, or more plainly put, working for the common good. Many of us share an insatiable appetite for political satire. Like many other fans, I have my YouTube favorites. Topping my list is the program Redacted Tonight with Lee Camp. Lee covers stories about the likes of Bernie Sanders, Jill Stein, Chris Hedges, Richard Wolff, and many other great intellectuals. A few weeks back on Redacted Tonight featured a fascinating guest, John Boyk, who is courtesy faculty at Oregon State University, a data scientist and engineer working on solutions to the many challenges that face us and the world we and our children will inhabit. John is a refreshing voice, the type of voice that I hope will inspire us all to work together for the true common good. What our guest John Boyk will explain is a path forward to not only survive but to thrive on this shrinking planet. I'm your host, Steve Schaefer. Stay with us for the common good, where we all need to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Well, as we promised, welcome to The Point, Dr. John Boyk, Oregon State University, courtesy faculty. Let's dive right into what you do and why it should be so important to all of us and our children. Please explain how society has an intrinsic biological purpose.
Hello, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I will get to that purpose, but I would like to just maybe take a little step back and say, what is the issue that I'm concerned with?
Absolutely.
With my work. Many global policy professionals, scientists, and individuals are deeply concerned about climate change, biodiversity loss, and a host of other problems that we face. And in the science literature, there's clear calls for some kind of transformational change. There's quite a discussion going on about what would that look like and how would we do that. And that is the topic of my three-part series that was recently published. And I'm asking the question, what do we want to change to? What would be the purpose of change? Who do we want to be if we change? And what is the appropriate, what kind of society is appropriate for human beings? You know, what would it do? What would change bring us? What would we want to get from it? And who are we? Before we can answer the question of, you know, how should we transform, we have to basically know who we are and what we want. And that's the question that you were kind of raising there. And in the first part, as I mentioned, is a three-part series. And in the first of those, the entire focus is on worldview. In that part, I offer that we are obviously individuals from a certain perspective. But really, we are a whole organism, too. Society is very much like an organism or a superorganism, if you will. And it's cognitive, just like an individual is cognitive. So you could say something like, you know, the cells in your body are kind of akin to human beings in a society. And society as a whole, it's like a synergistic. All these individuals are part of a society. And as a whole, the society is more than just the sum of its individuals. And the society is cognitive. And I offer in the series that the purpose of our systems, our governance systems, our economic systems, our financial systems, educational systems, all of those systems are to serve society as a cognitive system, as a cognitive architecture. Very much like our neural system serves the human as a cognitive architecture that allows us to think so that we can run from danger, anticipate the future and store food, or whatever an organism needs to do. Our systems, the societal systems, help us to do that. And they were obviously never designed as such. I mean, that wasn't, you know, as they evolved over the last several centuries, I don't think that was really what was in the, you know, the shakers and movers' mind. But now society has the opportunity, with all that we've learned in science in the last, you know, over the last 100 years, we're now in a position to actually take this seriously. Like, oh, we are an organism. We are not only an organism, we're part of the larger whole. We're one organism among many. And all of our societies and individuals and the other societies on the planet, the societies of, you know, birds and bees and all animals and ecologies, it's all cognitive. I'm suggesting in this series that we can simply get with the program. You know, that, I mean, if we're going to redesign our societies, we can align them with the larger sort of biological purpose going on, and that's to be, you know, that purpose is to be intelligent, to anticipate danger, to think ahead, to plan, to obviously to enjoy and to play, and all that goes with it too, but to be cognitive, just like a human is cognitive, only at societal level. That's the overview.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, I think that from my standpoint, what it is we just kind of are short on consciousness. We're not paying attention. Well, obviously our society is in crisis, but you claim that our central problem isn't dirty energy, pollution, or even climate change. Just exactly what is it?
Right. Well, take climate change. It's been very clear in the scientific community for, I don't know, 20 years or something, that climate change is a real thing, a serious problem, and we really, as a society, need to do something about it. And various proposals have been made as to what we could do to, you know, reduce greenhouse gas emissions and various things. So 20 years slip by, or 30 years slip by, and not near enough has been done. And why is that? Obviously climate change is a problem, a serious problem, and so is biodiversity loss and pollution and groundwater depletion and soil erosion and all the other things are serious problems. But I think of them mostly as symptoms. They're symptoms of a society that has, you could almost say, a cognitive dysfunction. We are faced with danger, clear danger, you know, right in front of us. And we're not reacting in a way that an intelligent organism would. So I would say that our major problems, like climate change, are really symptoms of a deeper problem, and that problem is a cognitive dysfunction. Once you see the world this way, if you would be willing to consider seeing the world this way, then so many things become more clear. Like our economic systems, for example, they're not designed to solve the world's problems. Per se, I mean, you know, some good things certainly do come out of our economic systems, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is, you know, it's more like individuals trying to maximize their own personal wealth and corporations trying to maximize their own personal wealth. And there's really no reason to believe that a whole bunch of people acting sort of selfishly is going to be the best thing for for the world at large. I mean, that's just kind of crazy. So, you know, our systems are not really designed to be cognitive systems, and I'm offering that we could redesign them. Science has made tremendous strides over the last few decades and would have much to say on, you know, how that might work. How could we do that? How could we communicate in a way that, and make decisions together in a way, and share information together in a way that would really serve the purpose of societal cognition?
Yeah, actually, I get back to that statement I made in the opening about the idea, are you going to be part of the problem or part of the solution? You know, and I think that that's the direction that you're pointing in, is that we have to approach this and use our brains to figure our way out of this, kind of as a simplistic way to put it. John, as a society, can we align with our intrinsic purpose?
Yeah, well, I think we can. We can make great strides in that direction. Just a moment ago, we were talking about how we might redesign our systems to serve as cognitive systems. And I would like to just inject there that even if I were the most brilliant person on Earth, or you know, my team was the most brilliant team on Earth, and we came up with a fantastic new governance system and economic system, a collaborative governance system that was fair and just and deeply democratic, if I brought that plan to, say, the U.S. government or any government, the chances of that being implemented would be about zero, I would say, because rapid, large change, jumping onto a new bandwagon would be politically a disaster and expensive and risky and all those things. So it's, I'm arguing in the series that not only do we need to change, do we need to reorganize society, but we actually can do that. And there's a viable plan to do that, a viable path to do that. And I would say that path is towards small-scale, almost, say, scientific field trials with willing communities, where the scientific world scientific community partners with local communities, designs new systems, and implements then sort of a kind of a scientific field trial mechanism at the local level. So, you know, maybe it's true that some people are, you know, don't want to be part of whatever solution is we might offer. That's fine. But starting small and at the local level with volunteer participation and willing communities, that would make a very viable plan to test out and to demonstrate that some of these new ways of being in society, of being together, might work better than our current ways.
To get back to one word that you mentioned, and that's team. And it appears that you're certainly not alone in looking at this. Can you give us some idea of how many people are actually involved in this process?
Oh, if you're talking about the larger process of, you know, calling for transformation, I don't know how many policymakers and scientists are on board with that, but it's really a big deal. I mean, the United Nations has numerous documents that call for, I mean, in very, very clear language, call for a fundamental reworking of society from the, you know, from the ground up, kind of. I think that the far more common approach to it is to be thinking of, okay, well, we need to, in our economic system, we need to change the in the financial system, we need to change the policies on, you know, what gets funded, and, you know, we need to shift funding over here, shift funding over there. So all of that stuff is great. That's kind of where it's at in the scientific literature for the most part. It's looking at individual topics and individual within individual systems, what can you do within current systems. My work is a little bit different from that. I'm looking at the question, out of all conceivable ways to organize society, which ones might be most useful for the well-being of society and the environment and our long-term security? So, you know, the de novo design of new systems, and, you know, testing, design, scientific approach, science-based approach to the development of new systems of organization for society. And that is, I don't know, that's a much smaller group of of scientists working on that, I would think. I don't know the exact number, but I'm sure it's not too large. And I don't think that's because of lack of interest. I think if there were funding for this approach, maybe I should say that's really what the three-part series is about. I'm laying out a potential R&D program of how you could actually do this. You know, how could it actually work in a sort of a nuts and bolts way? And if that program were ever funded and moved forward, I would guess that not only would scientists come out of the woodwork to be supportive, but I think the policymakers and you know, individuals in societies and leaders in societies and communities. I think once it became clear that this is actually possible, then I think there would be just a ton of support for it. And I say that mostly because we're in such dire straits. We're human beings are really, really in deep trouble right now, and will be even deeper trouble, you know, in the coming years and decades. So I think that there probably will be. I'm hoping that this approach is received with some interest, and I think once it got going, I think there would be kind of a bandwagon effect where it's like, yes, there's a way to change. Yes, let's change.
Well, and I think that one of the things that I noticed when you were on Lee Camp is the fact that you made mention of the fact that we get all caught up in the political footballs that go back and forth instead of looking at the big picture. I think we have to jump past worrying about what's happening with the royal family in England and term limits and all that stuff. You're absolutely right. We are approaching dire straits, and that's why really is nowhere else to turn except to science.
Absolutely. Science can be malaligned with you know, society to a degree if the funding is, you know, it sort of depends on what gets funded, in a sense. But on the other hand, science is really the institution, in a sense, that we look towards like, what is this world? Why? How do we, you know, what's going on in this world? You know, that's kind of a science question. You know, like, how does a rocket work? That's a science question. Predict what's going to happen tomorrow? That's kind of a science question, you know, especially when things are complicated, like climate change, for example, is very complicated. And it's to the science community that we look for answers, like, well, you know, what's going on? How is this going to affect us? So the science community, I see it as this enormous untapped potential for answering this, you know, trying to answer this question, or at least examining this question of out of all conceivable ways to reorganize, what might work best for the well-being of everyone concerned. So I think there's tremendous potential there, and I really want to emphasize, I'm glad you brought the point up, that this project is not a political project. It's not political at all. I have little interest in politics myself, but I am interested in answering important questions that could affect the future of society. Questions like what kind of governance system, what kind of collaborative democratic governance system could be best in a cognitive sense, you know? And and I just want to say too that the literature and the field of cognitive science has just exploded in the past 10 or 20 years. A lot of it due to AI and other topics like that. But there is much to be said about how organisms cognate, how thinking occurs, and how it goes wrong, and what is its purpose, and how would you design a system to be more cognitive. There's just a ton of information available. So I am hopeful, actually, that if we put our minds to this, we could actually come up with some really wonderful designs for testing at the local level.
You know, another thing that was mentioned on Redacted Night, I think that there's this fear that we're just going to stop using fossil fuel immediately and we're going to make all these dramatic changes. And from what I gathered of what I read of your papers, it is something that is going to be somewhat trial and error in the beginning, until we find systems that actually can kind of move us toward that transition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I'm actually looking over a horizon of about 50 years for this project. So this isn't we're gonna change everything overnight. No, it's not like that. And besides, that would be way too expensive and difficult to just change things abruptly overnight. It would be a nightmare. But working at on a volunteer basis with volunteer communities and the cooperation with the science community, that can all be done nicely. It can start small. You can have various tests going on, multiple tests going on at the same time. You can be collecting data. And the thing is, at least in my belief is, or my hope is, that once you kind of design a few systems, test them out at the local level, if they give the benefits, if they produce the benefits that I'm anticipating they would produce, like reduced uncertainty for the community involved, a stronger, more stable economy, empowered decision-making at the local level, you know, all these things, the benefits would be so dramatic that it would catch on. One community would look at the other community and say, "Wow, that looks great. What are you doing? This is wonderful. We want to try it. We want to be part of the trial." And I think that the concept is that this would spread exponentially fast. So even though it would start small and start slow, it would grow exponentially, and within this horizon of 50 years, could potentially spread to much of the globe. At least that's the hope, and that's the concept.
I think that the use of the computer in smaller, poorer countries will make a lot of this stuff far more available. And we need to take that lead as we go forward so that we do help other, you know, poorer communities for sure, because that's where a lot of the problem lies, in the fact that we just simply kind of ignore what's going on in the rest of the world, and we can't do that anymore.
That's right. Yeah, we're all a whole. We're all one. We are a human civilization that's an organism. We are individual societies that are organisms. We are individual communities that are organisms. We're individual families that are organisms, and bodies that are organisms. You know, so we're deeply connected with each other and with the environment, the global, you know, ecology and the flows of nitrogen through the nitrogen cycle, and, you know, everything is connected.
Yeah.
And all we really have to do is just be, honest with what we are, honest with the way things are, and what this is what we are. We're living cognitive organisms deeply connected to all living cognitive organisms. I do want to, if we have a minute, I would like to say one more thing. That you kind of raised a topic I wanted to address.
Absolutely.
And that is poorer communities or poverty in general. I just want to say that poverty is, there's no reason there's no reason that there should be any poverty at all. I don't think. I mean, in a well-designed system, because obviously that's not, something's wrong with the cognition at the societal level if a whole bunch of folks are living, in poverty or homeless or whatever. But I published a simulation study based on some of these ideas for a new design, new economic design, several years ago. That looked at it was a simulation over a 30-year period. It actually used Eugene, Oregon as a kind of a census data for Eugene, Oregon as a kind of a background. The simulation, it was illustrative. It wasn't predictive. It was just an illustrative simulation to explain what I'm talking about. But in that simulation, poverty was eradicated. There just wasn't any poverty.
John, I hate to cut you off, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Not only that, I want to recommend that people watch you on Redacted Tonight with Lee Camp. Keep in mind, there are a host of independent media outlets on YouTube, The Kyle Kalinske Show, The Young Turks, and many others. You don't want to trust corporate media all that much. Thanks again, John. We look forward to hearing more from you.
It's a pleasure.